Maybe it's recording?
I think it is.
Well, I guess it's recording if you've been listening to this. So this morning I want to look at Genesis chapter 28. And Jacob's ladder is, sometimes it's called. Let's start in verse 10. Just to give you a warning, were you here last week?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. This is your first time, right? So this Bible study is a little different. Did you tell them?
Did you warn them?
How about?
This Bible study? No. It's a little different. It's probably one of the most unique Bible studies in maybe the world. We look at the languages, the Hebrew and the Greek, and we also look at the Jewish tradition surrounding the stories and the world that Jesus comes out of, being a Jew, and just what all that entails. So you'll get the hang of it here in a second. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read in Hebrew in Genesis chapter 28, verse 10, and what you can do is you can follow along in your English. I'm going to read the first couple verses here, and then we'll just talk. Yeah, just verse 2. Okay. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva. Vayelech Harana. Vayifga Bamakon. Vayalen Sham. Kiva Hashemesh. Vayikach Me'avne Hamakon. Vayasem Mirashotav Vayishka Bamakon Habu. Alright, so Jacob, he's gone out. Why has he left Beersheba from the backstory? He's scared of
his big bad brother
Esau. Right? Jacob's he's done some dastardly deeds. He hasn't been what we call the most godly person. And so he's running. He's a runaway. And so he comes to this place, and there's a word that appears three times in what I just read. I don't know if you notice it in English there. Vayifka b'makom.
Place.
Yep. Makom is the word in Hebrew. And it's we've talked about this before. Place in Jewish tradition has this idea of God being in this place. If you were to go to, say, Exodus 33, verse 21. When the Lord appears to Moses, Mount Sinai, the Lord says, "There is a place, Makom, near where you may stand on a rock. And when my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." So, here's one example. Specifically, this place in Genesis 28, what pops out to the Jewish readers, the rabbis, those who are the teachers at the time, is it talks about the place in verse 11. And he took some stones from that place. It gives it, it specifies it, but it doesn't give it a name. And so it engenders questions like, well, this is interesting. What is that place? And so you look at Exodus 33, verse 21, and there's this place connected that's near the Lord. Genesis 22, the Akedah, right? The binding or the sacrifice of Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
God tells Abraham, you know, go somewhere and I'm going to show you. And verse 4, on the third day, Abraham looked up and he saw the place.
Whoa.
In the distance. This, and what is this place called according to Genesis? Actually, it's not according to, well, according to Genesis 22, what's the area?
Moriah.
Moriah, right? And what is that associated with in the biblical tradition? Okay, but before Jesus, what?
Zion, the temple.
The temple, right? And so, who lives in the temple? God, right? I mean, obviously God doesn't live in the temple, but his presence is associated. His name dwells there. And turn to Deuteronomy 12. Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy is well known for telling the people of Israel, you know, where you need to worship. It centralizes worship. And especially here in this chapter. 12 verse 2. Destroy completely all the places on the high mountains and on the hills and under every spreading tree, where the nations you're dispossessing worship their gods. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, etc., etc. Verse 4. You must not worship the Lord your God in their way, but you are to seek the place. This is Makom again. The Lord your God will choose from among all your tribes to put his name there for his dwelling. To that place, again, Makom, you must go. And there you'll take your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, etc., etc. And that has to be Jerusalem. It has to be the temple.
You know, Jerry, I was reading just this morning in the Sacred Bridge, and Anson Rainey points out the parallel with, I guess, some Arabic word, Makom, being like a holy place.
So it even has more of a etymological...
Possibly, even in the word itself, there was some kind of understanding of a holy place.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to get to that with Jacob's experience here, specifically. So if you were to keep reading through the book of Deuteronomy, and you'll notice this idea, the place the Lord chooses, it's alluding to the temple, to Jerusalem, and again, this is kind of the basis for Jewish tradition when they read the word place and it's ambiguous. Obviously, place just means, you know, here's a place for you to sit. It has the same meaning in English, you know, that place over there. But whenever it has this kind of ambiguous thing, the place, it kind of sparks interest. Like, why is it the place? But it doesn't talk about kind of specific what that place has a name. Then it's, and people start to think about the temple and God.
Yahweh, the Yahweh was the high place to worship.
Right.
So place, high place, even for sacrifice, things like that. So it kind of ties in. A place is kind of designates a place of worship.
Right.
Even non-godly places.
Right.
Yeah. We were talking about Pepe. They have a place down there, the high place.
Yeah.
Really well preserved. And that's what they have, sacrifices.
Yeah.
Interesting. In English, place and high place obviously have something in common. Place, right? But in Hebrew, makom and bama have nothing in common. So that connection that we make in English, the connection is there in the thought, but not in the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the word for high place is different.
It's a totally different word. Yeah. Bama. It's just different everything.
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, another point that's not the word place, but cave in
cave?
1 Kings 19:9.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah comes to
the cave.
To the cave.
Right.
And you're supposed to know from that it is the cave that Moses was in, that God hid Moses in, because could have just said he came to a cave, but says he came to the cave.
And it also says Horeb in that chapter as well.
Yeah.
And Horeb is basically Sinai.
Right. So,
is there any word in Hebrew for the than ha?
Any other
word? Any other word?
No.
Kind of the only one.
Yeah.
German is pretty picture. Right. I get a little description sometimes in German what it was. You know.
Right, right. Yeah, that's it. So
it's almost there's another connection with the thing you just read in. Was it 28 in Genesis 28 or 29 where we end with Jacob?
28. Yeah.
Because it says Vayevo Sham El Hamera Vayalen Sham.
Right. Right.
Which is just interesting.
So what he's saying is both the story of Elijah when he comes to that cave and Jacob when he comes to this place, they both stay there or they sleep there. They like it's like a hotel. It's not a hotel, but it's like they sleep that night there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, actually, we're going to, yeah, it's a campsite. This whole idea, why is Jacob coming to this place right here? I mean, if you're reading the story, what do you think? Does it just happenstance? I mean, that it happened this way?
Well, that's why we would think to Thomas Devon here. We think, well, this is the place he came to stop the night.
It just happened. Right.
But now that you bring this out, you've got us thinking and confused. Not confused.
Right.
Well, he was on his way to Haran, right? So he has in his mind to go somewhere.
Right.
And then he comes to this place.
Right.
And that's where he decides to rest.
Right. I mean, so I think, you know, in Sunday school growing up, that's what I usually think of, that it's there. But if you keep reading the story, first off, why is he taking a rock to put at his head? This isn't a tradition that you do in the Middle East. You know, like people in the West, I mean, we all like soft things on our heads when we go to sleep. Stones are not enjoyable experiences, right? So that's very strange. And so there's actually traditions in ancient cultures and in the Bible of people coming to places specifically and bringing stones together to hear from God, to have an experience. They call it, the term is incubation, actually. Incubation, just like a chicken, you know. I don't know. It's what I learned in my class, and I found it out there as well. I'll just read to you the thing. It's the religious practice of sleeping in a sacred area with the intention of experiencing a divinely inspired dream or cure. Incubation was practiced by many ancient cultures, and perhaps the most well-known instance among the Bible, it's found in 1 Kings chapter 3. Solomon went to Gibeon. Gibeon's just north here of Jerusalem, which is also close to Beit El. And the reason why he went there is because that was the most renowned high place. So talking about high places again. Mm-hmm. You know, before the temple was built, there's high places everywhere. There's still going to be high places everywhere, even after the temple is built, because there's always going to be people. Remember when Solomon dies, his son takes over?
Yeah.
And then there's Jeroboam, the other guy. He says, I want to be king of the north. And the kingdom splits. You have the north and the south. How does Jeroboam get people to worship in the north?
So it's two altars.
Yeah.
At the border.
And where are they at, the two altars?
Bethel.
Yeah.
And Dan.
Yeah. So in Bethel, this is this place. This is where Jeroboam builds one of his temples, where Jacob is right here. So there's some history attached to this place. Because is this the first time that we hear about Bethel or Beit El?
No.
Where it is the first time?
Abraham camps between it and Ai and sets up an altar. And then he goes to Egypt and he's bad. And he comes back to the same place and calls upon God in Bethel again.
So that's Genesis chapter 12. When Abraham first comes in the land. So anyways, going back to this whole idea that, you know, Solomon went to Gibeon because that was the most renowned high place. And there the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night. Sound familiar, right? Like our story here with Jacob. And Solomon asked, remember, this is the story where God asked Solomon, what do you want? And he says, I want wisdom above all. But this whole idea of coming to a place to hear from God or in other cultures, their gods, it's found in Greek culture and the ancient Near East as
and
well.
The incubation thing is really like a warm surrounding of the place. Everything's so nice around you if you think what that word means.
Right,
you know,
right.
In the presence of God. But
well, that's the thing is certain Christian sects still practice this, yeah. This thing, specifically in some Greek monasteries where, you know, you go together, you pray and you try to hear God and they try to basically have, I guess maybe pray before they go to sleep to have God speak to them.
And it says keep the world out also, keep everything out, you're in a closed
place. Right, so anyways, just to kind of put that spin on the story there, just to think about, you know, why are these stones being brought into this whole thing? It wasn't for a pillow for to comfort him that night. Were you going to say something, Sharon?
Well, it also says he set it up at the area of his head.
Right.
So the implication is not that he's sleeping on it, but that it's near his head. It could also be blocking wind or something.
Sure, sure.
As you say, like a sacred stone.
Right.
Go back to that. Accidental? Did he plan to stop there on purpose?
Right.
I mean, I think God had a purpose, but
sure.
You know, later on when it says, "It says surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." I don't think he was expecting to meet God. You know, his whole character was anti. You know, he was a scoundrel.
Right. And, right.
But I mean, it was a place God had designed for him to meet him. But I don't think he was planning necessarily to go to Bethel. This is a sacred place. My father or my grandfather set up something, but it was a place that God had ordained for him to meet him.
Right.
and meet him.
Or maybe, because up until this point, has Jacob ever talked to God or heard from God? No, this is the first time, right?
Right.
So maybe it's more of he's surprised to hear from God. Like, okay, I know this is a place where my grandfather came and did an altar or an area, and I know this is, but then actually God appeared, like, oh wow, it's real, like, so, you know, it's, again, it's kind of, there's some, it's not exactly clear, but it's kind of interesting to think about the implications, about Jacob's character, about, you know, what was he, did he kind of have a purpose, but then, like you said, God kind of showed up, even if he in an unexpected way, because this is, you know, from his life that we see his first experience with God. What else is this the first time in this story? Let's read. Let's go back to Genesis 20. Let's just read the section so we have the whole context here. 28 verse 10, Jacob left Beersheba, set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and he lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway, and I'm just going to call that Sulam, resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place. There's Makom again. I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? Or fearful, how fearful is this place? This is none other than the house of God, Bethel. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and he set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me, will watch over me on this journey I am taking, he will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So we said this is the first place that God speaks to Jacob, or Jacob has any type of experience with the Lord. There's another thing that happens, obviously, for the first time. If this is the first time it's God speaking to him, what would that be? In the long line, the tradition of his father and grandfather.
The covenant with him.
The covenant, right?
The promise.
The promise. This is the first time that it comes out to be brought up about the promise about your descendants having the land and then multiplying and all that. The first time. what else is this area right here that he's stopping? It's like it's a border between coming in and out of Canaan in some ways. It's not literally on the border, but this is kind of where Abraham stopped when he came into the land the first time. So it
goes to Shechem and then it goes there, right?
Right, and so that it because they're so close together, this region right here, it's kind of like the next stop to going back to the other world, the other land, which isn't part of the promise or the covenant. And this brings us to Jacob, and he sees angels. We'll call them that. Messengers of God, right? In verse 12. And what are they doing? What does it say there?
Ascending and down.
Okay, so they're going up and they're coming down. Is there something a little strange about that?
Sort of coming down.
Yeah, why aren't they coming down and going up? So what have you heard? Or what's your interpretation of that? There's lots of them, so, you know, nothing's wrong, really. One idea is that because this is kind of the border between the land of Israel and the land outside of Israel, as far as a stopping place, that these angels that are going up are the angels that are with Jacob. That have been with Jacob, because they are the guardians of Israel. And so as he's come here, they now have to leave Jacob. And then the ones coming down are now the angels that are going to be a part of the other part of that land. Do y'all know the story of Daniel? He has the vision, chapter 10, and he sees these princes. I saw the prince of Persia. He was fighting, or actually Gabriel comes and says, you know, I was stopped by the prince of Persia, and then after that the prince of Greece is coming. And those are terms for angels. You've heard this idea that there are angels for specific nations, or there's a principality, you might use the word from Paul's language, principality. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 32. This is a tradition that started in the time of Jesus. It's found in the Dead Sea Scrolls and in our Septuagint, which was the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. I mean, the Septuagint is the Greek of the Hebrew Old Testament. So Deuteronomy 32, verse 8. Someone want to read that?
And Most High gave the nations their inheritance when he divided all the human race. He set up boundaries for the peoples according to the number of the sons of Israel.
Okay, does anybody have a different translation there? Or a footnote next to the sons of Israel?
Footnote says Dead Sea Scrolls.
Does it say what? Probably Dead Sea Scrolls.
Masoretic text.
Uh huh.
That's the old Hebrew text.
But does it say anything?
See also the Septuagint, sons of God.
There. Okay. So the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Septuagint have sons of God here, not sons of Israel. Sons of God are obviously, usually people connect that to angels. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to read it, according to the number of the sons of God. So he set up boundaries for people according to the number of sons of God. So in other words, for all the peoples, you know, if you're talking about Hittites, Egyptians, Persians, or today Americans, British, French, Portuguese, according to those peoples, there is a son of God or an angel. There was a tradition that was developed. You see it in Daniel. You see it again in the way this was this translation that you find in the Septuagint and the Dead Sea Scrolls. So there's this interpretation then that as Jacob has come up to the border between two different peoples or two different lands, the angels that were part of this land are going up because they're done with their duty. The angels that are going to be for this land are now coming down to join him. Somebody going to say something?
There's also a bit, a parallel to the type of mythological literature in the East, where God separated and divided and manned up to the sons of other gods.
Right.
That's reflecting.
It's a
polemic with
right. That type of literature. In Psalms. Jesus quotes in John, where is it? He's made, yeah, I know what you're talking about. What is it in Psalm? Is it Psalm 29? That might be another one.
Check that out.
Psalm 2 or 110?
Yeah, what was the one you just said here in Psalm 1?
It was Psalm 2 and 110, the quote of God.
No, I know that, but there's one about Jesus says you call yourselves anyways, you can look for that. I want to come back to Jacob's ladder. This is what we call this whole experience. What do you imagine?
I mean, how when you see pictures or how you've been taught Jacob's ladder, what do you think it looks like?
Like a ladder.
Like a ladder, right?
A step ladder.
Like a step ladder.
It's going to be real hard to go up and down on that thing.
Maybe this angel could be here.
On the one side?
And then this one angel could be on the back side.
Yeah, that would work.
Kind of like something like that. But yeah, right. Logistically.
They use their wings.
Yeah,
make sure you don't step on someone's fingers.
A little bit like that. Okay, first off, Sulam. Mm-hmm. This is the word. Right?
Yeah.
How many times, this is the word that we've translated in our English generally as ladder. How many times does this word appear in the Bible?
One.
This is the only time. So it is an awkward, and that's not
Apple.
Awkward, it's just,
Apple.
You don't have another witness to confirm etymologically or contextually what it means.
My name is there.
No, Sulam.
No, I'm talking about my Hebrew.
Oh.
Let's start with the same letter.
Yeah, same letter.
Yeah.
So, so it doesn't appear anywhere else in the Bible. So that's something to think about. What do we have in the ancient Near East?
Ziggurat.
Yeah.
We also have ramparts that you can bust into someone's house if you're trying to, or the city if you're trying to conquer it.
Sorry. We have a word for step, like ma'alot.
Keith, am I using the word rampart right?
Not in this.
Yeah, siege ramp, or the one that you
ride.
Like at Lachish, where they dump in all that seed ground.
So if Sudan were just steps, then why won't they say Ma'alot?
I mean, well, some people have tied it into...
Sulam, like with Sula, or Maslul, or Mesila. Those are words that have to do with highway, or like a path, or a road.
Right.
Because at the end of this whole experience, what does Jacob proclaim about this place?
This is nothing but the gateway to...
Yeah, he calls it a Shaha. He calls it a gate of heaven, or the skies. Okay, and Shaha in gate, in the Bible, where's a Shaha? Where do you have a gate?
City.
It's a city, right? A gate is generally associated with the city. And it's you either come in or you come out of that city. It's protection, right? It's keeping out danger. It's protecting the people on the inside.
Right.
And so, generally when you have a gate, you think of a path, right? Because there's the city, there's the gate. So...
They also have that concept of the sky being a body of water,
right?
Because it was blue up there, and they thought of it as water. So like in Genesis, when they separated the water from the sky,
right? Mm-hmm.
Shamayim and Shamayim, it's another type of water. And when they talk about opening the gate,
the heavens,
so heavens,
like for the flood,
for the flood or for rain, it's like. There's a little trap door that opens, and that's what lets this water fall down onto the earth,
like windows.
Yeah, it's a little window.
Or like a gate.
Like a gate, yeah.
Right.
So that's the only thing that's holding that water above your head,
right,
falling down on you is a gate.
Yeah. So this whole thing with the ziggurat, you know, there's something there, I think, because you can have, you know, people coming up and people coming down in a practical way if you're going to design something to do what it's saying.
I can bring a picture of the ziggurat. We made it there once.
Yeah?
Huge, big, huge.
Where at?
In the Abraham ziggurat, in Ur.
In Iraq.
Yeah, I got some pictures of a lot of it. It's a huge complex, and it's a whole block long. So. And at the front, a little bit like the lodge, so 50, 60 stairs up to the first level. And then we went up to the top and, I don't know, 100 meters long, 250 meters long or something, maybe 200 meters.
Right. How does Genesis 28 describe the Sulam? How does it specifically describe, besides the angels, what does it say about it?
It's resting on earth.
Resting on earth.
Reached out.
And its head reaches the heavens.
The heavens.
What does that remind you of?
Tower of Babel.
Right, the Tower of Babel. Right? Babel. Babel.
You go to Genesis 11. Why was that tower built?
They didn't want to get spread apart, and they wanted a name.
What's that over here? To reach heaven.
To reach God.
And it's the same language here, that this tower is, Babel, is to reach, you know, the heavens. I'm looking at 11 verse 4. Mm-hmm. Let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens. Shemaiah, so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. So what are the people wanting to do, right? They're wanting to go up to the heavens. What's the very next verse say about God?
He comes down.
Yeah, Genesis 11.
Came to see the city.
Well, yeah, God, it says, comes down. It's the same thing about these angels that are going up and down. So again, it seems like there's this idea of how is man, humanity, connecting with God, with the deity. Same idea, there's something about this that you see this desire of people to touch the supernatural, to know something more than just their basic existence here on earth. And this isn't like you pointed out, Larry, this isn't Jacob. He didn't necessarily, from what we can tell, he didn't necessarily ask for this specific dream. It happened to him. Which brings me to another thing. This is a dream, right? Chalom. Who are dreams associated with in the Bible?
Joseph.
The two most famous people are Joseph and Daniel, right? Joseph, the words, or the root of it's used 13 times with Joseph. Daniel, it's used 24 times. And then we have this one time with Jacob. And besides that, there's one story with the Midianite who had the dream about Gideon conquering them.
There's Abimelech.
It's not a dream, I don't think.
Yeah, God cursed him in a dream. I don't know. You might not have the.
You might
not have the word. It's not. It's not. It's not chalom.
It might be chazon.
Yeah, it might be chazon. Yeah, I'm talking about the specific chalom.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'm talking about the word that's used here with Jacob, and the word that's used with Joseph and Daniel is also chalom. So that's what I'm.
So it's bachalom right here. This is chapter 20.
Of what? Vayomer
elav ha'Elohim bachalom. That's with Abimelech.
Yes.
Tell me
which one are you talking about?
He's the king of Gerar.
And what's your reference?
Genesis 20, verse 6. And this is when he gives his wife Sarah over again, another time, same thing, verse 6.
Arlene was asking the question, when you think about John, Isle of Patmos, was that a vision or a dream?
Well, it's in the Greek.
Same word?
So
it's Greek and...
Yeah, I mean...
It's Greek to me.
Right. It might be related if we were to look at it, but since I'm just focusing on the Hebrew text right here.
So. Vision and dream are different.
In Hebrew.
The words basically in Hebrew.
Right.
Well, he's saying the actual word... Because it might be a related concept. Like here I have in Genesis 26, 24. God appeared to him at night. That night.
Who? Oh, 20 verse 6.
26 verse 24.
26 verse
24.
That's
so God appears at night. You could imply in a dream. Or you could say, you know, some kind of night vision.
Right.
Not in a vision, but,
yeah. So, I missed that one. And I'm sure I might have missed something else. Sorry. But notice here, it's Joseph and Daniel. Jacob has this one time. But Abimelech, who's not part of God's people or whatever, the Midianite, he's also, you know, not considered. He's just some stranger in the story. And Deuteronomy and Jeremiah have a few instances of false prophets or lying prophets saying, you know, we've had dreams and this is what we've heard. And then you hear in Joel about, you know, the Spirit of the Lord, the old men will dream dreams. And so it's interesting to think about Jacob here with him being mentioned here. And that not only is he having dreams here, he's having experiences with angels. That was the other thing I wanted to talk about with Abraham. Where do we have angels appearing in Genesis?
They come down because they want to see Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay, so Genesis 18, right?
Right.
There.
Wow.
There we go.
There's a ladder.
They've got the stepladder too. So he's got dreams, angels. So where in Genesis, you have Genesis 18, where they're coming down,
They're not coming down, but they're described as men or visitors. It doesn't actually say necessarily.
Oh, sorry. It's the next part in 1821. It says, "Erdana ve'er'e ha'ketzakata haba'a elai asu kala." It says, "Let us go down and see." It's the same thing that you have in chapter 11 with God coming down to see.
Yeah, yeah.
They're saying, "Let's go down and see."
And it's the same language like in chapter 1 where God says, "Let us make man in our image." That
right.
Idea of God talking in plural. So there's always been the question, who's God talking to? A lot of certain Christian traditions will talk about, oh, it's the Trinity. You know, God's talking to all three of Himself. But then there's also God's talking to the heavenly host, you know, the angels that are part of His cabinet, if you want to call it that. So, yes. What else do you have in Genesis with angels? Think hard. Who gets experiences with angels?
Oh, Jacob wrestles with somebody.
Right. He does with a man, it says.
Yeah.
But then it says, never says necessarily an angel,
Right.
But you're right. You might as well assume it's something like that.
Something funky.
He has experiences with
angels. In Genesis, that's what I'm asking, yeah. Who?
Oh,
in Genesis, yeah. Can you give me some examples? Think.
Abraham has the three men.
Well, that's what he's been saying, the visitors coming to his home.
But then right after that, in chapter 18, it says the angel of the Lord spoke to him. The Lord turned and spoke to him, and then later on it else says
right. The angel of the Lord. There's this kind of fuzzy thing, like sometimes it's angels, sometimes it's God. Like who's
Hagar.
Actually?
Hagar.
Yeah.
Angel Hagar.
Hagar, yeah. That's very interesting. Not only does she have an experience with an angel once, which is not common. She has it twice. It's very...
She's kicked out.
And she's, you know, who is Hagar, right? She's not Sarah. So that's very... That's an interesting thing to think about. Abraham, besides the experience in 18 and 19, in Lot, you have when he's going to sacrifice Isaac, right? And the angel comes, says, Abraham, Abraham, don't do it. So... Those are a couple things with Abraham, but it's interesting. This is Jacob's first ever hearing from God, and his first experience is going to be connected with angels. Look at chapter 30, 31. Chapter 31. Jacob flees from one trouble, which is Esau, and he runs right into more trouble, which is going to be his father-in-law, because then he's going to have to flee from him as well because of bad relations and who knows what's going on, what certain monkey business with sheep and things. He's got to get out of there, and he's got...
And then he meets his brother again.
And then he runs back into his brother again. So, more trouble. And Bethel is right in the middle of it. You know, he first has that experience. God says, I'm going to bring you back here. He spends 20 years over here. He runs away from more trouble.
He went east, right? And then he came back.
Came back west.
Okay.
And then he had to confront him. You know, you always got to deal with your past at some point. And here he is. He's having to confront his brother. And that's a whole other story. But
he calls him the face of an angel.
Right. Peniel. Face of an angel. But here in 31 verse 11, he says, he's recounting what happened to him at chapter 28, right? This is our story. He says, the angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob. And I answered, here I am. Okay, sorry. He's not recounting what happened to Bethel. He's recounting of God appearing, or the angel of God appearing to him there in Laban's house. The angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. And I answered, here I am. And he said, look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. Go to chapter 32, verse 1. Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is the camp of God. So he named that place Mahanaim. And it's interesting. It's just weird in this whole story. It's like angels are floating in and out of Jacob's life. Like he even just bumps into them here. There's no like story about they came mm-hmm. to save him or to give him a message. He just kind of bumps into some angels. So you have a very kind of supernatural world going on here with Jacob and his angels. And finally, I just want you to look at chapter 48 of Genesis, verse 16. Jacob is blessing the sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim. Verse 15, he blessed Joseph and said, may the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has delivered me from all harm, may he bless these boys. And so, again, it seems like Jacob has some type of special relationship with angels. Maybe more so than other people in the Bible. Somebody was going to say something. Or anybody want to, any comments?
There's significance whenever it says the angel of the Lord, and that several times in Genesis, always have felt that was a reference to the pre-incarnation of Christ.
Right.
He'll use that interchangeably, the angel, and then God said,
you know, right.
And that whole encounter that, again, the Trinity.
So. There's something mysterious about the angel of the Lord and then God speaking sometimes one after the other. Like, can you differentiate between the two? Are they the same?
It's very confusing. I know. But you wonder, you know, the spirits and demons and all that. Sure, you're talking to all these sort of uncertified spirits. And it just seems very confusing to me. Except I get the awe, you know, like the individual experience.
Right.
Seems so powerful than it's described. But to read it, it's like,
right, right.
Yeah, when he wrestles with that guy, doesn't he say, "Whatever I've seen God face to face, and I live." So it's another one of those.
But yeah, it's this thing. But how can? Because Moses couldn't even see; he only saw the backside of God.
Sure,
and
sure.
You know, you'll die if you see God. Mm-hmm. How can someone wrestle with God? I mean, you don't understand.
I know what you're saying.
Sees the face, somebody. Sees the face of God and lives.
And there's a lot here, but I want to summarize now kind of what I see the Sulam as representing, which is, you know, this gate of the skies of heaven. And it's very encouraging for me to see, as you pointed out, that maybe in some ways Jacob wasn't planning this. It happened. On the other hand, you could also argue that this was a holy area, known at that time as a place where God did show up. So it might be a nice compromise to say that Jacob probably didn't have high expectations to meet God, but he still went a little bit to at least extend the hand to God to say, well, if you want to do something, I'll be over in this area. And you know, God showed up and radically changed his life. you know, gave him the promise, gave him the blessing, made a covenant with him. And we think about John chapter 1, Jesus is, I want to turn there, I want to end there, John chapter 1. Jesus is starting his ministry. John chapter 1, verse 43. The next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael, and he told him, we have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, the Torah, about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Nathanael asked. Come and see, said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, Here is a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false. How do you know me? Nathanael asked. And Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you. Then Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel. And Jesus said, you believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You shall see greater things than that. He then added, I tell you the truth, you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. And if you remember from our story in Genesis 28, it says that the ladder, the sulam, comes down literally like almost on his head. And God's kind of standing. There's two ways to read it. He could be standing on Jacob's head, like Jacob's right here and he's right, you know, very close. Or he's at the top of the ladder looking down at him. But here you have Jesus, you know, saying basically the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Obviously alluding to himself. And this whole idea that Jesus takes on that place of a mediator of between God and man, between heaven and earth, and how that idea of experiencing God as, you know, part of the Christian faith through a relationship with Jesus. So anyways, Shabbat Shalom.
Same order to ascending and descending.
Yeah. Right.
It's interesting that the letter of my Bible specifically references Genesis 28:12.
Right.
Mine.
Yep, yep.
So why do you think God chose Jacob? This guy had